it's going to be a big week in college football for several reasons, including we've got several spring games: Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, LSU, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt all have games this week and several more next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything, I guess, for fans who like to watch? Alabama's, of course, will be on ESPN. Is there anything to watch for this weekend in regards to whether it's Alabama or the other SEC teams who are playing? Anything that you would say is a big thing to watch this upcoming weekend?
Well, I think for obviously Alabama, you want to know how Bryce Young is doing at quarterback. You've heard a lot about the defense being very good, even though they're divided up in inter squad. That's something that you're curious at. I mean, the Auburn situation. What do we know? Which is not much. Will Bo Nix be better at quarterback? How much will Tank Bigsby play? I think at Georgia, you pretty well know that JT Daniels is going to be the quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think the other question from that is going to be who's going to be the backup? Could that be Carson Beck, who is from Jacksonville? Also for LSU, they'll be playing multiple quarterbacks: Miles Brennan, T.J. Finley, among that group, and obviously Max Johnson too. A lot of questions at Mississippi State. I think not real sure who's going to be the quarterback there either. And where in the world did we begin at Vanderbilt? obviously with a new coach. So there are multiple questions for all these teams.
Yeah, and I guess all eyes, of course, since they're on national television, will be with Alabama. It would seem that Bryce Young is the guy. Paul Tyson is there. A lot of people like him. Of course, the great-grandson of the great Bear Bryant. But Bryce Young seems to be the guy, and Nick Saban has had some good things to say about him as well. Of course, given his experience, you would think that he's the front-runner to lead the Crimson Tide in the fall. Would that be right?
They love Bryce Young. Saban has been very complimentary of him with what he said. So the obviously all eyes are going to be on Young. We've seen him before, and we think that he is going to be a good quarterback. But he didn't ever play very much because Mac Jones had the kind of year that he did. So I think that. And obviously, you've got different running backs. You've got different wide receivers. How will all those guys connect during the game? And again, we still think the strength of this team is going to be the defense, frankly, until the offense is able to catch up. So it should be fun watching Young on Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, there's so many different storylines going on in the SEC this year, and it's not even with the players necessarily, even with some of the coaches. As far as pressure is concerned, we've got some new coaches, and we've got coaches who have a lot of experience as far as years are concerned coaching in the SEC. Which head coach do you think is in the most pressure this year to perform in the SEC or maybe even in college football in general?
Well, Ed Orgeron is on the list of guys that I think you've got to watch, and it's not so much for what they do on the field, because they're going to have a good team. I don't have any doubt about that. I think the question is by the time that September gets here with this Title IX investigation, how difficult is that going to be, and how much pressure is going to be on Orgeron? I mean, what we know, certainly from reports, USA Today has done a lot of these, would be what you do with situation that we hear about over and over again about like guys like Darius Geis, who had multiple infractions according to reports from USA Today, and that Orgeron knew about it and really did very little to penalize these guys. So I would say not on the field, but you've got the pressure that's mounting with these investigations, which are very serious for LSU. And a lot of these other guys, like Josh Heupel, Shane Beamer, they frankly have just gotten there. So they really don't even know what they're in for yet, frankly.
Yeah, and Shane Beamer is one of the most ecstatic as far as the opportunity that he has. And we know that South Carolina has a brief amount of successful history there. Will Muschamp trying to get the Gamecocks back to some relevancy in the SEC East. How patient do you think the South Carolina athletic department, along with the Tennessee athletic department, will be with Josh Heupel as well? You think with programs of that high a prestige that they might get only a couple of seasons to prove what they've got, and then if they haven't shown anything, then they might get the boot.
Well, Tennessee has shown how quickly they've done that with Jeremy Pruitt. Of course, an NCAA investigation adds a lot to that, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But then South Carolina has been incredibly patient with their fan base. The thing both of these teams need to do is they need to do something offensively to look like they are capable and much more capable than where they've been in the past. We don't know who the quarterback in South Carolina is going to be. It could be Luke Doty, who's a really good athlete. Jason Brown, Colton Gaithier, Connor Jordan are also in that mix with Tennessee. You can ask the same question. The Hooker kid who transferred from Virginia Tech, the Marr kid who's been there for a couple of years, and also Harrison Bailey if they could get their quarterback settled and their offense looking a whole heck of a lot better than it did, that would be a major plus for them. Fans have no patience when they're losing, and double that when that you're not able to move the ball or score points, they have even less.
Yeah, and in a way it can be very understandable, especially for Tennessee fans wanting to just beat Alabama or be even in competition with them, and they haven't been able to be in that very often as of late.
No.
It's college sports in general, but with football as well, the transfer portal is getting a lot of, it's getting a lot of attention given there's a lot of people who don't like it. There's a lot of people who do like it. What as far as your thoughts are on the portal, what do you think it has done to the way the programs have to set their expectations, and also how coaches in both college football and college basketball have to approach recruiting?
Well, here's something that we need to look at for this week. The Division I NCAA Council is meeting Wednesday and Thursday. And they may very well be voting then on the one-time transfer rule. In the end, if that happens, what that means is, at least we think it is, that the schools are going to be able to allow transfers without a penalty. Before, it was a situation where you had to sit out for a year if you transferred to another school. Everybody would have kind of one to where they could do that if this is passed. Now, the coaches, I think, very wary of it. And we, frankly, really don't know what to gauge us on. And we don't really know how to limit it, but we don't know how to deal with it, frankly, until we've got another couple of years I think with this. For basketball, it can make you a good team almost overnight. Football, I think, is a bit different. So the jury is very much out on the decisions that are coming out of the pike with this. very shortly.
Yeah, and in a way, I think some people kind of compare it to, it's not obviously paying college athletes, but some people compare it to that in the fact that there's more, it gives the players the ability to be more independent with their decision making. It also puts more pressure, I think, on coaches and even programs itself. I know Dan Mullen has voiced his concerns about it. Coach Franklin at Penn State has voiced his concerns. There's a lot of coaches that have some questions. And as you said, even with the whole name, image, and likeness ordeal that's going on, it seems like the modern wave is coming in, and it might take a little bit for the coaches to adjust and even for us media to even fully understand what the implications of it are going to be.
Well, very much. And see, the problem is, overall, with the transfer portal, you've got kids who are getting into the portal who are staying there, and frankly, having no one really look at them. And then I think the real shame of it, or kids who have declared for it, and they're just basically stuck. And where do they go? Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
Because hopefully someone would give them an opportunity, but at this point we really don't know about where that's going. So it's so much up in the air, and the kids thinking that they're actually going to get in the portal, transfer where the grass is greener, and everything is going to be wonderful, and that very well may not be the case.
Oh yeah, and especially with the amount of recruits coming in. I mean, we especially in basketball, we see a guys people transfer over, and then we've seen recruits as true freshmen come in and immediately jump those players who transferred to get playing time. So those guys who transfer are stuck in the same situation that they were in beforehand, trying to get out of a situation that they weren't playing in. So I think it's, yeah, it's one of those things that it can really, it can rear its ugly head at times. It can also be very, very beneficial as well.
Well, I hope so. And it can rejuvenate a career. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But will it be very many of them that are that have their career reinvigorated as opposed to the ones who really aren't able to do anything? It's a major concern on both sides.
Yeah, and one of the I don't believe football has come up with this. I know that there's been I think there's been some talk about it, but college basketball, of course, has the rule set where players can go to the NBA combine and they can hear from the coaches what they need to work on, and if the coaches don't think they're ready, they may be able to come back to school, and that is a little bit beneficial as well because
Yes.
there's certain guys like at Texas Tech who have transferred since Chris Beard left Texas Tech, and Mac McClung being one of them, declared for the draft but also entered the transfer portal. And it could be one of those situations where if he doesn't get selected, then he could go and maybe find another school to play for, which it would actually be his third in his collegiate career that he would have played for.
Yeah, well, look, at some point it gets ridiculous.
Yes.
There was a player that played at Auburn. He didn't play for me. He wasn't there very long. Who's been at six different schools? I mean, at some point, you've got to be able to find a home and be able to stay there. And a lot of these kids, unfortunately, just aren't doing that. And what they don't get is, let's just say the guy at six different schools sits down and meets some of these NFL representatives for the combine, or that possibly might lead to the draft. Well, how are they going to answer these questions about going to so many different schools? And what kind of an impression, and it won't be a good one, is that going to lead on these NFL people?
Yeah, exactly. If you're like that player, or you're like these guys that try to bounce around because you're not getting playing time, it puts off a bad impression to these teams, knowing that if they draft you, if you're not getting the playing time, you're going to request a trade, or there's a whole lot of different things that can go on with it. One more question for you, Brent. last week on PTI, I saw this and it was really interesting, and I thought I would certainly bring up the question to you. We saw the NCAA tournament, and of course, it was all in Indiana and finished in Indianapolis. They were debating whether or not a single site for the Sweet 16 and beyond would be a worthwhile idea. Do you think that after the success that this tournament had and a lot of the good things that people had to say about it, do you think the NCAA could come up with a format that either the entire tournament is in one site or maybe the Sweet 16 and beyond all goes to one location?
No, I think that's a one-shot deal. Frankly, you've got too many different cities who would like to be involved with this. And to think about this too, by the time you're dealing with the NCAA tournament, and look, I know they've got to figure out the locations sooner rather than later. But with the NCAA tournament not going on to next March, you've got I think ample time to see that enough people have gotten the vaccine, or either through herd immunity, and I think they'll be fine to be able to split it up. Because listen, I hope they do, because Jacksonville is on the list, and we get the first and second rounds. And hopefully we'll do that. We're on that 5-year rotation. But even with that, and even the Sweet 16 and beyond, it worked because it needed to this time, and it worked brilliantly in some ways. They were certainly going to get the $1 billion in with it. But I think they go back to business as usual next year.
Awesome. Well, as always, a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for taking the time, and we will catch up next week. Sound good?
Good. Thank you, bud. Take care.